Heyo, what is up, my lovely listeners? I'm Jack Rowland, and this is In Too Deep. Boom, episode 150, people. I thank you all for welcoming me into your ears and brains. What a fun and strange journey this podcast has turned out to be. Today, I'm joined by the incredible Queen of the Wall, George Rose. George is a prolific mural artist whose work saturates the streets with bright, vibrant colors, gestural brushstrokes, depictions of the natural world, and all-round good vibes. George is incredibly hardworking, constantly bouncing around the globe, painting from city to city, sharing her beautifully seamless color gradients and crisp, clean line works. She currently has her solo exhibition titled Hyper Vista, showing at KSR Gallery, which is at 525 Collins Street, Melbourne. Get down there. Alrighty, please welcome to the show, George Rose.
Is there a point to all this?
I think we're getting in too deep.
You don't apply.
Bad luck.
Oh, I have one speed, I have one gear. Go, 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 go.
I'll tell you when we're getting in too deep, too deep,
too deep, deep, deep.
George Rose, how you doing?
I'm all right. Wait, are we recording?
Yep, sure. Ah! Gotcha. Thanks so much for coming on. Been a long time in the making. But yeah, how you doing?
I'm going all right. Thanks, Jack. Thanks for having. Yeah, I know. We've been talking about this for such a long time. It is so nice to be here.
Yeah, fantastic. I know we've already had a long conversation before this, but
several cups of tea.
Yeah, 17 cups of tea to be exact. Mm-hmm. Definitely going to be a few toilet breaks, but
it's going to be more tea.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Just about to pour it.
Excellent, excellent. You could pour it right into the mic for some ASMR.
I was wondering whether we should get the mic on this, but you guys can just imagine it. It's spearmint and licorice if you want to play along at home.
First, I want to say you have to be. I love your art, obviously.
Thanks,
I've
man.
Had the pleasure
feeling
of,
is mutual.
Ah, thanks. I've had the honor of working for you a number of times and helping out with some of your huge, incredibly colorful, beautiful murals. Uh-huh. And also, just want to say you would have to be the like one of the hardest working people in the mural game that I've ever come across.
You're just
constantly working, like you have worked well and truly very hard for the sterling reputation that you have. So,
cheers.
Are you famous? You're kind of famous.
No,
you're kind of famous, right?
Not at all.
You're a little bit famous, I think.
I don't know. I think people in the mural scene know of me.
Yeah, they definitely know of you. They definitely know of you. So, when did the mural game begin? You're well and truly established now internationally and at home. When did it all begin? What did your first murals look like? Tell me about your worst mural.
My worst mural. Oh, there's been a few.
Now tell me, where did it begin?
Yeah, okay. So let's start at the beginning. I feel like there's like a little bit of a like preamble and a bit of a like kind of everything around everywhere. So I've done art my whole life, like a lot of artists sort of like, which was awesome. My parents were super supportive. My mom was a primary school teacher, so she kind of knew the importance of art and creativity. And so she was really great like that. My dad, also the same kind of, both of them were like, wanted me to be happy more so than to prepare me for a life where I could earn a lot of money. So they were really good like that. And then I got to the end of year 12 and decided, oh, I should probably do something with applied arts rather than, go down the specifically like, you know, starving artist kind of route. And so then I did a graphic design course. So that was a decision I made because I was like, well, you know, I could do architecture, I could do photography, I could do like graphic design. I ended up doing that. And then during that course, my lecturers took me aside and they said, look, you're not really a designer. You're kind of more of an artist than a designer. So, cause I looked up to designers like, Stefan Sagmeister, who did all of this, really cool, interesting design work that was kind of blurring the boundaries between what art and design is. He's technically still a designer, but he kind of did all these like, activations and installations and really, really rad stuff. And so I kind of like based my whole design career around, doing those sorts of things. And yeah, I think my lecturers were like, well, it's not really about that. And so like, you know, during university, I just played as much as possible with what I could get away with. Because when you get a brief at university, it's just kind of like, respond to these things, you know, here's what you need to produce and go for gold, do whatever you want. So I'd used to come up with these like insane campaigns and I'd, you know, go and do these paste ups on the street and take photos of it and come back and overlay type and be like, here it is. And they'd be like, wow, that's 7 more steps that you needed to do, but cool.
Great.
And so my first mural was during university when I decided to do a campaign and I animated, I think it was like over 200 different frames on a wall.
Oh my God. Yeah, so, I think you told me about this ages ago. Kind of like
still out there.
Still like it's still Blue, that kind of dude
yeah,
style?
It was like Blue. So it was around the time that Blue kind of did all of his stuff and I was like, that's so fucking cool. And I like just idolized street artists and I really, you know, I loved all of that stuff. And so I was just kind of like, how can I do that? And so, you know, because at the time I was in university and I was like, well, I'll just create an animation, like, you know, on a wall for
easy.
Yeah. I was like, this is sweet. So that was my first mural. And you can still see it. It's out there somewhere, on YouTube.
What was the animation of?
It was of a sparrow jumping into the scene and then flying off and then a deer because it was of the era of the deer and the wolf, all of the tattoos that were around then. And then there was like a girl behind a tree. I think the tree grew and then the girl had like hair or something like that. And
how many frames did you paint?
It was hundreds. Fuck. But
that's
the way that I got permission. The way I got permission for that was that there was a clothing store and I said, hey guys, can I, you know, do this thing on here? And then, and in the end I'll do it like, you know, it'll have your name on the mural at the end. So it was this thing that I kind of like did this animation and took all these frames and worked with a friend to do the music for that. And then I presented that as like, you know, part of my tertiary education, like, you know, for whatever project was there. And then they ended up with a mural and that was kind of it. And so that was the first one, which was really fun. And then from that, I kind of got a bit of a reputation around Canberra because Canberra is...
that's where you're from, Canberra?
That's where, not originally, but that's where we moved when I was about 10 or 11 and
right.
I kind of went through schooling there and did university there. So yeah, it was like it's a super cool, tight-knit little sort of like creative community. And yeah, we didn't have a really big street art scene there growing up. Yeah, so that was cool. And then I kind of people kind of like asked me to do more things like that. And from there, I got involved in a festival called You Are Here Festival. So it was around the centenary of Canberra. And there was money put aside to do this like emerging arts experimental festival. And so I was involved in that for about 5 years or something. And from that, I kind of started creating these public spaces that we would have theatre and activations in. So it kind of similar to the Renew Newcastle idea. We were taking over these spaces in the city centre and I would do all of the set dressing for it. And so I'd, you know, have access to these walls that I could paint and I could paint on windows. And I did a lot of, I was obsessed with sign writing at the time. And so I was also doing like a bit of a sign writing informal apprenticeship with an elder sign writer who was based up there as well. And so, but I also could build all this stuff. So I was, you know, had all these workshops and was building all these different things that I'd install in the spaces as well. And so it was a really fun time. And that's probably where I started doing public installations and activations and murals and paste ups. I was doing a lot of paste ups as well out and around town because that was fun and easy and faster than doing these murals. And you could just get access to a site and pressure wash it off later. And yeah. And it was also kind of like I had a slightly different sort of aesthetic and style back then. Like I was doing a lot more line work, just ink drawing. So I wasn't really using color as much as I did these days. So
right.
That's me.
Do you think the graphic design training influenced your practice at all?
Yeah, for sure. Mm. Yeah. So after I did design, I had some electives left over from my degree, and my lecturers were like, "Hey, you should go to art school." And I was like, "Oh, okay." So I went to art school, and that's where like you know. The lecturers at art school were like, oh, you think like a designer, you're a designer.
Is this an undergrad? Like yeah, that undergrad. Bachelor of Fine Art?
Yeah. Yep. So yep. It was a little known thing that you could kind of do with the universities there because there's quite a few universities, is that you can actually do an exchange between universities. Yep. So I essentially did an exchange from University of Canberra to ANU School of Arts for a year, and then I got accepted into the honours in painting there. But because I was treated in the way that I was like, you know what, that's cool, guys. I'm going to do something else.
I'm tapping out.
Yeah. I don't really have to be a part of this, hey. which was probably really like a good decision on my part, because I learned a lot of skills that I've definitely taken along into my practice nowadays. But I think that this, you know, like the really graphic style that I've got, it definitely has been influenced by that period of my time. Mm. Like I think that because at the time I was doing so many different things. Like I was doing ceramics and lighting installation and, you know, oil painting and digital illustration and hand lettering, and just like I had such a crazy varied practice. But the style that I'm known for now, like I really leant into that once I did sort of murals, and that's kind of much more illustrative than it is fine art. So whilst like, you know, I was doing these like super realistic kind of like portraiture stuff, that's not something that I leant into over time. Right. But if I'd gone to art school, I probably would have.
Yeah, gotcha.
Maybe.
So what, just lingering on uni, it just sounds like you didn't enjoy the fine art uni much, but what is something that you got out of it? What's something that you got out of the fine art university training? Or was it all nutter?
No. Like I loved learning and education. I've always really enjoyed the school system with the learning aspect of it. Like I still, you know, these days I listen to audiobooks and podcasts. I like learning about things. And so it was, you know, really fun to have a period of time where there was, you know, you could just experiment and there was no pressures on you, that you didn't have to produce anything that was viable or that people would like. You could just do whatever you wanted to do, sort of. Because, you know, within that structure, quite often you'd find students would be producing stuff for the lecturers or for the tutors. And so in order to get like, you know, marks, because the whole thing is graded, people would start altering their styles in order to appease certain opinions.
Oh my God. I saw so many examples of that.
So many
people get talked out of painting.
Yeah.
They just get talked completely out of painting and end up wandering down Swanson Street wrapped in, I don't know, construction site materials with a camera following them.
Yeah, it's sort of this.
I snap out of it like, what happened?
I remember the statistics of like the people who would actually graduate from the School of Art and go on to become artists was like such a small percentage. It was like 2% or something. Mm. And then like, you know, that was the first year out of art school. And then, you know, 5 years later, there'd be even smaller population of people who were actually practicing artists, because what I witnessed and what would happen is that people would just burn out trying to do this stuff and being in a pressure cooker situation and trying to compete with all these other artists and who was able to create the best work that people in charge actually liked.
Mm.
You know, it was a weird experiment, but it was also really great. Like I did ceramics when I was there as well as painting, and I loved it. Like I love ceramics. My whole life goal is to retire and become a ceramicist.
Oh my God, clay. How good is clay?
It's so
just
good.
Playing with
it's
your
just
hands.
Like, yeah, I know. So tactile.
Yeah, I did ceramics too, and yeah. I thought it was so just an elective. So it was just a 6-month elective, I think. Didn't do it. Not a major or anything like that. But yeah, it's, I don't know, it's like, I hate to use the word, it's kind of sensual, isn't it? You could actually get to a point where you could make, you know, throwing wheels without even looking. It's just all, it's really like isolated touch, isn't it? It's really, I liked it.
I think it makes sense with murals because it's such a, you know, it's such a physically demanding job. Mm. So is ceramics. Like, you know, you're using your whole body to create it. So right. I feel like it kind of makes sense when you're like, I did ceramics. It's like, ah, oh, yes, this checks out.
Yep. So when with the I mean, you are, I see you as a mural powerhouse. You just you go hard, and you know, we've done jobs where you you know, I'll be spraying a room on this side of town, and you're like, cool, I'll see you. I've got to go to this other job, and you're doing two jobs at once. It's like unheard of.
Yeah, the worst was three at a time.
I don't know. I've never seen anyone work like that. It's incredible. It looks exhausting, but it's also
necessarily healthy.
Sure.
Let me just put it out there.
Also very inspiring to realize, you know, like the limits are just the limits you set for yourself. If you got to get shit done, you just get it done. But when did it all start kicking off for you? When did it actually, things clicked up a gear and you're like, okay, this is a really viable profession. This is we gotta go hard.
Mm. I so I moved to Melbourne like, I don't know, 11 or 12 years ago now. And it was probably then. Because when I was, you know, I tried to go to Sydney for a bit and I lasted 9 months because it was super crazy expensive up there.
Yeah.
And then I went back to Canberra and I was working at this like design firm, like part time, which was like a beautiful little firm, like new best friend. They're still up there. And if I wanted to do design, they would have been the perfect firm to stay at. And I kind of had, I reached this fork in the road where it was just kind of like, well, do I try a different city and try this art thing, or do I just stay here and become a designer and do that sort of stuff? And so I kind of like had a few things happen at the same time and decided to make the jump. And so I moved to Melbourne and then I ended up doing the NIS course, which RMIT offered. Yeah, I don't know whether they do that anymore, which was like a pretty much a really quick basic business course.
It's a great program. I've not done it, but really good. They pay you and you can still work.
Yeah. It was I actually, like, I had a friend suggest it because I was like, no, I'm not going to do it. And they were like, you've moved to a new city to become an artist. You need something.
You need a plan.
Yeah, you need a plan. And so I ended up doing that course. And, yeah, they give you, like, a stipend, which is not enough to live on, but enough to kind of, like, give you that boost of being able to set up your thing. And so I was kind of doing that. And then it was actually when I met my previous representation and had a discussion with them about, you know, what I did. And they sort of said, oh, like, you know, if you could do just one thing, what would it be? And I said, paint big walls. And he was like, well, okay, that's what you do now. So it was kind of probably around then that everything really took off. So just before I sort of signed with any representation, I had done this residency at like Redbubble in the city, and I was starting to meet everyone in the scene down here. And I was still traveling back to Canberra a lot to do murals and sort of starting to get some traction in Sydney. It's weirdly enough, I got a lot more traction in Sydney than I did anywhere else at the beginning. So I was kind of, I was on the road.
I think when I met you, I thought you were Sydney based.
Everyone
because you're
did.
Working so much in Sydney. Yeah.
I sort of like everyone thought that I was in Sydney or no one really knew where I lived because I was, I was just on the road heaps. Like,
how do you function? It's like, it's exhausting,
well,
right? It's exciting though.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny to think about like the before times and the after times in regards to like the pandemic, because up until the lockdowns, I would average two weeks in a location. So that was my average.
All right.
So, and that was for like, you know, 8 years.
That's pretty full
seven
on.
Or 8 years.
That's
yeah.
pretty full on.
So I went back because I went back and sort of would look at the flights and the things. And so like the longest period I think I stayed in any one spot was like 2 months. So, and then I would be going back and forth and I'd be doing all this stuff up until when the lockdowns hit. And then when the lockdowns hit, that was the first time that I actually spent any long periods of time in Melbourne. And so it actually felt like I had moved here in that weird time because I was like, oh, well, I guess I live here now.
Right.
Yeah. And now I'm kind of getting used to the idea of kind of getting back on the road again. And I think I'm very out of practice of it because of those periods of time. But it was that was a super painful experience because I was just so used to going that hard. Like I was so used to traveling. I was so used to like bouncing around and, you know, I'd get itchy feet. Like I'd be somewhere for a couple of months and I'd be like, oh, I need to go again. I need to go and paint a wall somewhere else. And so, that was super weird kind of having that transition to change.
Was it nice a bit to kind of slow down?
It was.
No.
No. I think looking back on it retrospectively, yes. But I can explain is that it felt like physically coming off like an addiction.
Yeah, right.
Like
that makes sense.
Physically painful to stop. It was really hard. And I reckon I was probably on the track to like burnout town. But it was one of those things that like I don't think I could have stopped unless someone physically stopped me. So yeah, that was probably it's so just strange to think about that sort of like period of time and how everything's different now to how it was when I look back on my life and how much I traveled and what I was doing. And you know, I'd refer to myself as like robot mode because that felt like I was just a robot. And I think stopping really has alerted me to like, oh, I was missing out on like life.
Yeah, life, that old thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
There are restaurants, so there are venues, there are gigs.
It's kind of a weird thing to try and explain to people. I think unless you have experienced that, it's quite disconnecting, because I think a lot of people really romanticize the idea of it. Like everyone's like, whoa, you're traveling around so much. And it's like, it's cool. It's definitely cool on one side, but it's also like, yeah, you don't have any consistency in your life. And like the amount of friends who have fallen away over time because I didn't have a consistent relationship with them, or like, you know, the amount of stuff that I've missed out on just because I haven't been around.
Right. Right.
But people don't really like see that.
Yeah.
Or think about it.
I kind of felt like, I mean, to a much lesser extent, but yeah, just going freelancing over the last, 2.5 years, I think it's been, just having that all of a sudden when you're freelance life, there's a lot of downtime in between jobs, and unless you're constantly applying for things and if you're not in constant demand, it's, yeah. And then you feel super guilty for doing downtime. Like I got to be applying, yeah. I got to be doing this. So it's a weird thing where you've got a bit more free time, but it's like full guilt ridden free time. You can't enjoy that free time. You got to be like applying, you got to be doing this, you got to be doing this, and just kind of making friends with that. The downtime has been a bit of a learning curve for me, for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah.
No, it's, I think, yeah, learning to love the downtime and learning to love that sort of like, and like not being guilty. I think because like, I blame a lot of it is on our society as well. Like, you know, you've got to be constantly producing things, and especially because like we're in the age of social media and we've always got to be putting something up, but murals take a while to produce. And so you can't be like posting things 3 times a day or whatever you're supposed to be doing in that regard. So, and if you're interacting or seeing your peers that are constantly like producing things and doing stuff, then there's that pressure, added pressure of like, why am I not doing that? Oh my God, I need to like keep chasing it. So yeah, but I don't think that's healthy. Like I definitely don't think it's viable long term.
Yeah. Your art is extremely colorful. It's very, very poppy and very wonderful to look at. It's we were kind of talking just the other night at your exhibition. You've just had an exhibition, which is, I also just learned, your first solo show. Yeah. That blew my mind. You've just been around for so long, it blew my mind that, yeah, that was your first solo show.
Yeah, technically, it's a bit of a weird technical thing there, but yes.
Right, because you've done like residencies or residency? Yeah, residencies, like open studio, which are kind of exhibitions.
Yeah, I haven't had like a formal kind of exhibition in a gallery space. So like, you know, I did a residency and I had an open studio, but that wasn't with finished work, and then I released a catalogue and like, you know, straight out of uni, I kind of had a pop-up sort of like thing, but it was also kind of like this weird kind of thing. So I don't think of those as being, you know, solo exhibitions or bodies of work essentially. Like they're sort of just like, so this is like the first kind of like solo exhibition in a gallery space with a body of work. It's as a result of a residency, but it's still.
Right. It looks incredible. Everyone go see it. KSR Gallery. It's on for a little bit. To win. A month, great. Yeah. But okay, so I was wanting to kind of explore like the ideas behind your work, but I'm actually also curious, when you're in such turbo mode, when you're only staying in 2 weeks per place, how are you also keeping the well full of inspiration and able to develop ideas and keep it fresh for you?
Yeah, I think the way that I think of inspiration isn't that it comes to me, it's something that I cultivate. It's more like a muscle that I've built up over time. And I'm quite analytical. And so I have over the years just looked at my work and really dug into like, okay, what is it about? What do I like? And trying to figure it out. Like I've tried to figure out all of the different elements and what my work is really about and my ideas and what I want to express. And so I find it really easy to produce works of art because there's just endless things that I want to investigate within this kind of like construct of the ideas that I like. And so I think that I really noticed a change when I stopped looking externally for inspiration and I started just being like, okay, well, you know, super questioning of my own work. And I know like the things that I'm really interested in, like color theory and mark making and, you know, especially for my commercial work, I'm really interested in endemic flora and, you know, sometimes fauna and I like line work, that I'm really interested in line work. Like, you know, I love looking at other artists, the way that their particular hand produces lines. So there's all of these different kind of like technical elements that I'm drawn towards. And so because of that, it's really easy to replicate something new. Like, you know, especially when you're looking at abstraction and color theory, it's just like, well, I often say, like, you know, I just want to fuck with people's eyeballs. It's like, how can I do it this time around? Like, what can I do that will, like, you know, I love making things look like neon when I'm not using a neon color, because there's ways that you can use paint that looks like it's neon, but it's not. So I really enjoy doing that sort of thing, because people often like, oh, you use neons in your work. I'm like, no, that's just regular paint. But I've just combined colors in a way that kind of makes you think that. So yeah, it's kind of a playful space, and it's kind of something that I like to do, but it's not, I don't have to kind of like find inspiration for like the subject matter. It's much more about like, oh, what am I doing in my practice that I can continue to kind of like look at? And what are these elements that I can use? And so, yeah, I think that that's probably the easiest way of explaining how I get that inspiration. And
right.
Yeah, it's not finding it. It's already there. It's just, you know, building up the muscle, the repetitive kind of like use.
Right. Mm. It's funny you say about the people thinking you're using neon paint, because people kind of ask me the same thing when they're like, how do you get those colors with oils? I'm like, yeah, you just buy it. You buy the color.
You just put them next to other different colors that, you know, make it look different and weird. Yeah, because you would get that as well with your work.
Like, yeah, I think there's like, just a misconception about like, yeah, you can kind of get any paint, any color in any paint really. Yeah, but yeah, it's funny hearing you say that. And yeah, you're totally right. Like certain colors, and I think I've seen in some of your statements, you've kind of had some color theory quotes and stuff, which I found really interesting, and how certain colors can vibrate almost and kind of wig out the viewer.
Yeah.
There's a term for that. Do you remember what that was? Chroma something? I don't know. Doesn't matter.
No, you put me on the spot. I'll see if I can remember it.
I found like with greens and reds, they're really often...
Yeah, greens and reds are quite an easy one to like put against each other and they'll vibrate. It's much more about the vibrancy and the... than it is anything else. Oh, man, my brain's not in the technical space at the moment.
I'll Google one of your statements while you're answering the next question. Oh. But what does kind of color do for you? What as I suppose like a language of expression? What is this? What is your interest in color theory?
I think it is a space that I can get lost in. I'm just constantly drawn towards, I guess, other artists in the way that they use color, and I want to create works that I, can get lost in myself. So I think it's really natural for me. It's not something that I've intentionally moved towards. I think that it's just something that's intrinsic to who I am and what I do. Like, you know, I've always really liked color. Thinking about it, my mom, she would always wear lots of color, lots of loud color. We were sort of constantly surrounded by it. Like everything in our house was super colorful. And, you know, I have these vivid memories of the Kendone bed sheets and swimwear and, you know, Jenny Key and those sorts of designers. So I think that I've been always surrounded by it, which is probably why I'm drawn to it now. But I think that it is something that I can get lost in. It's much more, I'm not really into like hyper literal ideas and artwork. I really like things that aren't telling it, like don't have a narrative. They're much more about experiential kind of things.
I mean, it's a vibe. It's like the closest thing, you know, really color, when you can get those color combos that just really sing, it is kind of the closest thing to like music, you know. It's instantaneous. It just
it's much more experiential than it is like, you can just look at something and understand what it is, but if you can look at something and your eyes kind of get a bit blurry and you can't quite focus on it, like that's much more about your body reactions than it is about like what you're thinking about the work or what the work is telling you to think.
Your work does have many different elements to it. There's like, there is the kind of graphics-y side, there is the high chromatic, there's the natural world, there's sometimes it's minimal, sometimes it's really expressionistic abstraction, like your new show, Hypervista. You've done a lot of mark making where you're actually building these kinds of
Chromastereopsis.
Chromastereopsis.
I'm pretty sure that's the one. Sorry, it came across my head.
Chromastereopsis, and that means like...
That's the...
When colours...
Vibrate.
It's hard to describe, right? Like it's almost like the push and pull. Your brain is like playing with push and pull. And it's constantly trying to put one forward and one back, and it kind of... You have a minor internal seizure.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good way of describing it. I'm just trying to look up the technical definition. Oh, wait, I've got my... Flight mode, do not disturb. Let's see if I can. I feel like here we go. It's a visual illusion that occurs when certain colors are placed alongside each other, making it unnecessarily difficult to focus on both colors.
Yeah, yeah.
The illusion is due to the retrospective wavelength simulating different areas within the eye.
I've also noticed that when you're, I've watched, a lot of tutorials of like painting tutorials sometimes. I used to watch them a lot when I was hungover. Really, really good things are coming. So like when you're talking about paint, a lot of people can relate to like shadow and light, but there's another kind of term called value. Yep. So that's when basically the lightness and darkness are the same. So you can get two very different colors, but if their value meet at the same time, it's very difficult. Easy way to explain it would be if you were to take a black and white photograph of two different colors with the same value, they'd pop up the same. And I think that's when a lot of it happens, when their value is the same.
Yep.
Anyway, chromostereopsis?
Chromostereopsis.
Chromostereopsis.
Look it up.
So back. You create your own brushes. I once had a conversation with Taj Deems, and he was talking about to get new, unique art and things, it's like use different tools.
Yeah.
Make your own tools. And I was like, that's genius.
That is a good way of putting it.
And I've been in your studio a number of times and you make your own tools.
Yeah.
When did that start?
I don't know. I think because I've always built things, I don't know when it would have specifically started, but I do know that over lockdown I spent a good amount of time building new brushes. I've always built stuff, and then, you know, when I started doing murals, I sort of stopped building as much stuff because I was focusing on murals, and that was really cool. And then, when the lockdowns happened, I was like, why don't I just try go back to building brushes? And I collect brushes. That's one of the things that I everywhere I go, I'll buy a brush. I'll try and get a brush from every, like, you know, that's local to wherever I'm traveling to or whatever I'm doing. And so I've got a good selection or a good kind of collection of little brushes, and, you know, I'll quite often use them and then they'll die over time and I'll be very sad because it's really hard to get international brushes in Australia. I think because I collect brushes, like, you know, I was just wanted to build different brushes to create different marks. And so initially I had wanted to build all these different brushes and then host play dates in my studio with people who weren't painters and see how they used the brushes and whether they used them differently to what I did. And then I wanted to utilize the brush marks and the mark making that they produced within works of art myself. And so the way that I create a lot of the mark making and the abstract elements within my works is I'll have ink and or black and white, you know, black paint or whatever, and I'll just create all the marks myself. I'll photograph them and digitize them, and then I've got this like bank of work or bank of marks that I kind of like use within certain works or whatever else. So everything that you see is always created by hand within my murals. Quite often.
So like your big giant brush strokes on your marks were literal brush strokes, and you're not really improvising on the spot.
I used to have these like just rolls of paper that I kept for years, actually. And then I think I've only recently gotten rid of them because I was like, why am I keeping all this paper? But I just have these rolls, and I'd roll out these, like, you know, just bits of paper, and then I just create mark and mark and mark again with all these different brushes that I kind of created. And then I just take photos of the ones that I liked, and then I'd use them within the works themselves. It's a weird process because, you'd think that I'd just go and do it gesturally, or I'd kind of, you know, just work with a painting itself. But I kind of like the idea of this process of going back and forth. So I'm creating something without thinking about it just gesturally and just intrinsically, like in the studio, and then I'm photographing it and then I'm replicating it really like meticulously. I'm going in and creating these works that look like they're organic, but they're not. There's this like tension between, you know, the replication of these marks that were once organic, but now they're not anymore because I'm choosing where to put them. So whether people understand that that's a part of the work itself, probably not, but it's something that I find really satisfying where right. I'm like, and then, you know, it might get photographed again and then I might reuse that work for something else, or I might kind of like, you know, I at one stage I was taking photos of the walls that I was painting and then I was replicating them, but just using my spray guns. And so they were really blurry and you couldn't really tell what they were unless you stepped away from the paintings themselves. And so like, I just like this process of, creation and then, you know, using that to create something new and then bouncing off that again and just like replicating what's already existed but creating something else. Like I just think that that's a really interesting part of the process.
It's an interesting relationship between that hyper control and total freedom. Like very flow state, expressive. You know, like one thing about that I've really come to appreciate about, you know, abstract expressionism is that you can't really capture in, you know, highly rendered work, I suppose, is movement. You know, there is a movement in there. There is a, sometimes it could be a beautiful flow that's, you can tell it's one motion. Sometimes you can convey, you know, aggressive mark making if you're hitting. And there is an energy in abstract expressive mark making that you don't get in the kind of work that I make at all. And that's beautiful. But then also you kind of have that high, you blow that up and then you apply the highly rendered kind of technique to it. So it's kind of best of both worlds, right?
Yeah.
What do you enjoy most? Do you enjoy the applying it on a larger scale or the playful motions of being in the studio by yourself?
It's funny. You're not the first person to ask that, but I think I enjoy each part of the process initially, and then I get annoyed of each part of the process initially. So like,
one's the antidote to the other.
Yeah. So right. it's like, oh, it's really cool creating all these marks in the studio. This is really fun. Oh, I'm really annoyed at this. Like, I don't want to do it anymore. And then as soon as I get on a wall, I'm like, this is the best thing. I love this so much. And then halfway through, it's like, oh, I fucking hate this. I just want it to be over. So I think I enjoy and despise all aspects of what I do. And I think it's just because maybe I'm a little bit impatient when I first start something. I just want to get to the end, but I also love the process. I feel like there's two people inside me that want completely opposing ideas.
right. Yeah. So studio practice is essential to your mural practice?
Yeah. One plays into the other, for sure. Even though sometimes they don't necessarily look like they relate to one another, they've always influenced one another. And especially when I was on the road so much, I didn't have as much of a studio practice. It wasn't really until kind of like a couple of years ago that I sort of started to focus back in on, okay, well, if I wanted to have a studio practice, what would that be? And it kind of like stripped everything back down to, oh, it would probably be more focused on these gestural mark making, abstraction and color theory. I don't think that I would ever get rid of the mural or the botanical kind of part of my practice, but it just hasn't kind of come into play into the studio yet. Like, you know, it's much more non-literal kind of form that I'm looking at when I'm in a studio.
Yeah. Tell us about we'll get to your show, but tell us about the residency you did last year, because it seems like that was a very formidable, is that the right word? A very concentrated time for idea generation, and your open studio, which was basically an exhibition, looked fantastic, but there were so many different styles. You could have gone in many, many different directions with many. I mean, how many works did you have? Like 50 more? Yes. There were so many works.
Yeah. That was a really necessary and probably pivotal time in studio stuff. So I'll the representation that I was with at the time, Eddie, he organized that space, which I'm, you know, internally grateful for. So it was one of those things that the owners sort of, after the pandemic, a lot of people had moved out of the city and they wanted to activate an area. And so he had sort of proposed, hey, like, why don't we get an artist in here and they can sort of like work and people can watch them do the work. And so I had access to that for like over a period of, I think, a few months. So I was still kind of traveling around and doing murals, but I was also kind of like working from that space. And I was terrified because, like, you know, I hadn't really had a proper studio practice in such a long time, but having access to such a big space.
The space was huge.
It was so big. It was like two stories. Yeah. Old bank, really high ceilings. And so I was
Where was it? Corner Burke and Swanston?
Yeah, pretty much close to the corner of Burke and Swanston, yep. Just outside of a tram stop. And there was always buskers, and not most of the time they weren't good buskers. Hey, let's not talk about that. So I was able to kind of like, the first thing I did was I had rolls of canvas and I put up these 2x2 meter sheets of canvas everywhere. And then I brought all of my paint in from, you know, where it was stored, which was just buckets and buckets of paint. And I was like, right, I'm going to use up all this paint. But in order to warm up to paint the studio, I did a mural. I painted the wall and the floor just at the entranceway because I was like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to paint small. So it was almost like I had to relearn how to paint on a smaller scale. And so 2x2 meters, I started with that and then I kind of like slowly worked my way down to smaller and smaller things. But it was great.
So 2x2 is small for you?
It was really small at the time.
But on a 2x2 canvas, I'd be like, this is a hero, this is a hero piece.
Can you imagine your stuff on 2x2? It would be so good.
The most biggest I've done is 2x1. Maybe a little bit bigger. But but yeah. That's my next thing. I want to go super big.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway.
That'd be great.
So 2x2 was working small.
Yeah, that was working small.
Because you're a maniac.
And I was a maniac. But it was great because like I investigated a couple of different things and then I just naturally gravitated towards you know, all this color mark making kind of stuff. And I was able to use that time to experiment and do a whole heap of different things, which is why I produced so much work. But then I wanted to have something to formalize the kind of end of the residency. So I opened it up for a day and had an open studio where people could come in and see what I was doing. Most of the works weren't finished by that stage. But then I spent, you know, the remaining couple of months after that just finalizing the works and ended up putting together a catalog sort of released that. I do sort of regret not showing that work, but it didn't feel like a body of work. It just felt like it was, you know, the result of this working in this space. But I was really proud of it. It was really amazing and it's
phenomenal.
Of the works from that, it's super, super beautiful. But the photography just doesn't do it justice because of, you know, the way that I guess light is captured in a digital form and the way that you can manipulate it in Photoshop and whatever else. It's so hard to capture some of what was really beautiful about the works. And that's why I'm really sad that I never really got to show people that body of work because really, really nice in person.
Mm.
So,
you know, it's crazy because it is so rare that anyone ever sees, I'll call it an exhibition, like a show like that. There's so much work. It's two stories. I mean, my comfort zone is probably 8 works for a show, maybe 10. I did 12 for one show and I was like, that's too much. I'm going to strip it 8. But I mean, you've got two stories, murals, works on canvas, small, medium, large, immersive.
And also some of the process was in there as well. Like I had a lot of the paper that I kind of used because I wanted to show people the process of like.
Right. Or your mark making strips hanging down from the railing up the top.
Yeah. And all the experiments as well. Like I had all these experiments, which I ended up framing some of those, like you can see right next to us.
Mm,
beautiful. Yeah. A lot of the sort of like works, like I kind of wanted it to be like every part of the process was on display in that. And that was really cool. Like I would love to do a show like that. Maybe next one.
I mean, you so should. Like if you're able to work like that and get that much immersion and large scale works, I mean, it really is an experience for the viewer. I mean, just the sheer quantity of work that you are able to produce and all just beautiful. It's a very unique experience to That's yeah. like even some retrospective shows wouldn't have that much work, you know. It was a really great experience. Is the point?
It was really great. And like I said, I'm you know eternally grateful to Eddie for organizing that because it really was very special, especially at the time, and produced a lot of work and was really great. So yeah.
So part of that show, you know, you had a number of works with these arcs, this kind of arc motive, and that has been carried through into your current show, Hyper Vista. Tell us about the premise or the concept or just tell us about the show.
So, I mean, as a follow-on from that residency that I did, you know, KSR approached me and said, are you keen to do this residency space? And it's only 6 weeks or 7 weeks in total, I think, that you actually end up getting access to the gallery space and you can create work in there. So I wanted to create a body of work that was a lot more cohesive than the previous body that I had done. And so I was taking one aspect of what I had created in the last one that people seemed to really gravitate towards, these arcs that I had created. And I was referring to them as rainbows at the time because what they were was like this, you know, this gradient with this like mark making that was in the form of an arc in front of it. And people really were really interested in those. And so I kind of wanted to dig a little bit deeper into that. And so I commissioned some custom frames and some custom canvases to be built. And also have done some rectangle canvases as well, but used one brush, which I had built to sort of do the whole show. And so a lot of it was kind of like I moved into the space and I looked at color palettes and I kind of experimented with colors and what I wanted to do there. And so the other thing I do is I do a gradient, but the gradient on the frame will be reversed because quite often, like, there are some really subtle gradients in there that you actually can't really tell that the color changes unless you actually look at the frame where it's reversed and you're like, oh, fuck, that's actually a different one.
Totally.
There's one work that's like these different reds in it. And I just sort of liked that kind of like ability of framing it and using the gradient in that way. So, yeah, I wanted to use this repeat motive throughout the whole space because for me the arc is kind of like a portal, like it kind of takes you places and kind of like what I was talking about. A lot of the stuff that I'm doing in the studio is much more repetitive and it's not narrative in any sort of sense, but it'll transport you somewhere. And I liked the idea that this arc represented a portal that would transport you somewhere that you wasn't language based. It was all just a visual experiential kind of idea. And so I thought I would just kind of lean into that idea and create this repetitive kind of thing in the space.
Yeah, it's perfect. You also had this incredible large scale sculpture with these big arches, consecutive arches that got smaller and smaller. They're orange with a kind of color fade, and that really was like a vortex.
Yeah.
You know, people were able to, you know, they're much taller than people looked at least 2 meters high, probably more. No, probably like 2.5.
2.5 almost, yeah.
And down to probably about 1.5. No, probably about 2.
No, less. It's a bit smaller because you have to, if you actually want to try and walk through it, you've got to like squat down and like shimmy through sideways like a crab. Yeah. So, yeah.
But that literally is like a portal. It's so.
It's a much more literal interpretation of like what I was doing. But what I wanted to do was replicate what was happening in the actual works, but in a three-dimensional sort of space that people could play with in that way. And that was really fun. That was the first time I've done more sculptural stuff in years, so I'd be dead keen to keep exploring that.
Yeah, I mean, you have to, really. Like, you have to, though, I said this too earlier, those at, I know, it's, if you're able to make your stuff, like, you do public art, if you take it to festivals or music festivals, really, I don't know if that's, like, your jam or anything, but, like, can I just say there is nothing like watching trippers interact with your art. It's a whole different experience.
Yeah, it would be really cool.
People like get reduced to like childlike states and they see it fresh. They're not being objective and critical. It's fun. It's mind-blowing. Like, people's faces react like children. It's like seeing that portal at, I don't know, rainbow or even pitch or something, like it would be so cool. But, I mean, you know. Whatever way you decide to go.
Let's see what the year brings.
Yeah, you have to make George Roseland, like another big residency.
A few years ago before I, you know, did this, that was what I wanted to do for my first show, was to create essentially like a George Rose Land. Like, you know, and I had all these like designs and it was going to be this big playground. And I'd still love to do that. I wanted to build this like playground for adults that like, you know, had an oversized slippery dip and had these like swings and like, you know, had art, like my artwork was on everything. And yeah, everything costs money, it turns out.
God, George Rose really Jumping Castle.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I literally had had a conversation with a playground producer about producing this space, and I'd still love to do that.
Hey, it's I mean, it's totally possible. Like, there's we're kind of in a new realm of this. I don't know. You've got some artists like Roan, what he's done recently with the Flinders Street thing. I mean, everything's kind of led to the next with him. He's definitely paved the way. There's a lot more artists like Jason Parker who we're looking at his work right now. He's incredible. He's kind of been doing much more immersive exhibitions. Yeah. I'm like such a fan of that as a new model of it, of exhibiting.
Yep.
Just not just as typical as, you know, a gallery show. Love gallery shows too.
Yeah.
But, you know, that immersive aspect, I could really see George Rose Land coming to life for sure.
I think when you like work as a mural artist, your work is already, it's not just a work in a gallery space. It is a lot more like interactivity to it. You can actually lean into that a lot more. So it does lend itself to those kind of like bigger installations, like, you know, Roan and Jason are sort of like doing as well. So yeah.
Over in the state, I mean, have you heard of that? I don't actually really know what it is. It's kind of like an art theme park or art museum, interactive art museum called Meow Wolf, I think it's called.
Yes, I know Meow
Wolf. Totally. Like, I mean, there are things. Or have you ever seen any of Team Lab's work? Have you heard of them?
Team Lab? That does sound familiar. I know Meow Wolf stuff a lot more.
Yeah, Meow Wolf is like psychedelia, turn up to 11, interactive. It's so cool.
There's a lot of like there's been a lot of spaces that have kind of been like that over the years, and I think that it makes a lot of sense to do that. And I've done a lot of rooms as well where every single surface is painted. But it's just like controlling the surfaces in the space and making it more of an artwork would be like, super cool.
With the arcs or the arches, we were discussing the other night at your artist talk, there's the portal element, there's the rainbow element, there's another element that, you know, the arc seems to bring up a lot for people. It's a very stable structure. Another one that you mentioned was, it's often seen in like chapels and religious kind of settings. Like
it's spiritual.
Yeah, there's like a spiritual aspect to it. Yeah. And I was kind of making the connection with the simple one motion flow of making your marks with the brush. You know, there's no room for error. There is some kind of for me, I saw like, I think you put it as like almost like a dance. I kind of interpreted it as like a meditation. You know, how you see a lot of like the Japanese calligraphy artists doing.
Yeah.
Was putting together that show any kind of, was it like a meditation?
Yes and no. Like I think that I think the act of creation can be meditative, and especially when I'm sort of like, I find it sort of more so when I'm doing murals because it's your movement is so much bigger. But when you're doing the gradients, like, well, when I'm doing the gradients, then that's probably much more meditative. But when it came time to do the brush strokes themselves, it's almost counterintuitive because there was a little bit more pressure on that. You know, you've only got one shot to do it. And because there was such a time sensitivity to creating these artworks, you know, there was 6 weeks. If I'd made any fuck ups, then I'd have to sand it back and start again from scratch, essentially. So those parts weren't necessarily as much because I was trying to be a little bit more, I guess, purposeful in the way that I produced those marks. So I didn't want it to just be slapdash and just put it on. And so I wanted to move the brush in a way that created marks that looked a certain way. So you can kind of go through, and even though they're all the same shape, at least this particular arc, there's huge variety in the line work and in the actual the way that the paint has been applied. So sometimes there's these like big blobs on there and there's, you know, people kind of really drawn towards those ones, or sometimes there's these really fine repetitive lines. Sometimes I will have moved the brush in a way that kind of creates this like hiccup or this like change in it. And it kind of creates these different characteristics. And so I had to be a little bit more mindful in that sense, but not in a meditative, mindful way.
Right. Almost like the opposite. Like
yeah, the opposite, I think. It's like
attack mode.
Yeah.
Cool. Prep yourself up and let's do it.
Yeah. I almost had to work myself up to doing it because, like, you know, I'd do these gradients and I would make sure that these gradients would be perfect. I'd spend so much time perfecting, getting it like this seamless transition, these like beautiful fades. And then I destroyed it by doing these like marks over it. And so these marks had to be, I had all this pressure to like kind of create these interesting marks on there. And quite often I'd kind of like step away and Matt would have to like take me away from the gallery because like I'd be like, no, this is, I hate it. What have I done? And then like, he'd be like, come on, let's go. And I'd come back the next day and be like, actually, this is good.
Yeah. Sometimes when you finish a piece or especially when it's so quick and like emotion based, like it's kind of not really up to you. I've learned it's not really up to you whether it's good or not anymore.
Yes.
Have you found that? Like I've found at least works that I've done in the past, some there's been a couple of works that I've just been like, oh my god, it's so not where I want it to be. Turns out it's either sold, where other ones that I were like, these would definitely sell, have not sold, or it's had a really, really positive feedback, overwhelmingly more than the other ones that I was very happy with. And then I actually have to teach yourself, like, I really try to stop telling people what I don't like or what I do like, because that can really influence how it's read. And it's actually kind of not really up to you anymore to dictate what people like.
Yeah, I think because I've painted in the public sector for such a long time, I've learned to let go of my work, like, you know, very easily. Like,
yeah, especially being walls where, like, you might get tagged.
You have to. Like, it's something that, you know, as a muralist, you learn really early on, like, you don't own the work that you do anymore. Like, you produce it and then you walk away and it becomes someone else's. It's the community who's around it. It's like, you know, the city itself. Sometimes it'll eat it and sometimes it'll live. Like, you know, you've got to try and let go of your work. So that part of it I find really easy. But the what people are drawn towards and what people like, I think this is like maybe a little bit of a tangent, but like, you know, I was talking to Matt, the curator of KSR as well, whilst I was doing the show, about creating these marks and that, like, you know, I have this expectation that I want them to be perfect, quotation mark, because what is perfection? But if I created something and it wasn't what I expected and I didn't like it, I had to sit with that discomfort because that was what the artwork was. It was creating these like feeling, and if that feeling is discomfort or if that feeling is that it's so perfect and beautiful or like whatever those feelings that kind of came up with looking at the work, that actually is what it's the purpose of it. That's what it's supposed to be. And so I think that it's like changing the way that I think about my work as well, because I sort of am like, well, that's the whole point of what I'm doing. So you're right in saying like it's not up to me to decide what is good and what is bad. I'm just creating the work with this intention, and then someone else is drawn towards it. They might like it or they might not like it, or, you know, but that's actually the point.
Yeah.
Or what it is.
Kind of like a, not to sound like an art wanker, but yeah, very much a conversation between the inner you and the work being presented. And
let's be wankers.
Yeah. Also, back to like the mural stuff, very kind of nothing is permanent. Another like little spiritual lesson in there.
Oh, I love the impermanence of murals. Right. That's the whole point. It's like they're ephemeral. They're not designed to live forever. And that makes them more special.
Right. So, you know, you were talking before about the arcs being like a portal and stuff, and the kind of also very much used in religious. Do you have much of a spiritual inclination? Do you have spiritual interests, or is especially dealing with the abstract, you know, there's often it's the space between, and it's the metaphysical that's actually the subject matter. I mean, not necessarily. Everyone's different in terms of intentions. But, yeah, do you have any spiritual interests that you...
I think I have, like, you know, I have this idea that I have a belief structure. I'm not sure that I would classify myself as, like, excessively spiritual in any sense of the word, but I do... I do have pretty strong beliefs in a way. like more so about things connecting and about what we know and don't know and what we understand and don't understand. I think I'm pretty on the rational side and like not literal, but like I'm interested in patterns. I'm interested in the way that things connect. And so I have ideas that probably play into spirituality, but I don't think that I could necessarily say, oh, I'm a very spiritual person. I don't think that that's a part of who I am and my personality type and that sort of thing. But I do find elements of life spiritual. Like I think the other day in our artist talk, I sort of talked about when I was younger and went to the National Gallery back in Canberra and Monet was there, and I just remember standing in front of it and just being drawn into that piece, like, you know, with all the colors and the way that he used color. And so I found that sort of experience, you know, spiritual in a way that it's not relating to, like, you know, religion or God, but it touched me and changed the way that I kind of like thought about the world and thought about life and the meaning of everything, whatever else. So I think that there's always, you know, I think everyone has that aspect to them.
Is Monet one of your favorites?
He is. It feels really cliche to say, but
I'm the same. Like some of my favorites are, I just really love Van Gogh.
Yeah.
You know, it's such a cliched answer.
I know it
and
feels
stuff,
like it. I'm like, I wish I could give you something more, but
but the greats for a reason, right?
Yeah. Yes and no.
I mean, I've always been really, really drawn to romanticism era. Very, I don't know. It is kind of or the sublime as well. Yes. I love the sublime being, as far as I understand, it's trying to portray something that is far greater than man. Mm. You know, kind of godly, and I love those ideas of looking for like the God in nature. It's to be worshipped and feared as well. It's a giver and it's a taker. It's like natural force is kind of God, you know.
Yeah.
What art really gets you going, George?
Oh, I mean, look, there's so many. There's a lot. It's hard to really hone in on one. Like obviously, because of Monet, the cliche answer is like the Impressionists and. You know, there is a lot of gestural movement in the works that they created as well, and that's probably what I'm really drawn to. But, you know, obviously I'm also really interested in abstraction. But I don't know. I think I really go through phases with what I like and what I don't like because, you know, once upon a time I might have said, like, you know, arts and craft movement with, like, you know, William Morris and, you know, there's something that's really graphic about a lot of the artwork created in that time that I probably was really drawn to, but nowadays I wouldn't specify that. I think the Impressionists have always had a real soft spot for me.
Mm. Have you been to the Art Islands in Japan?
No, I really want to.
Naoshima?
No, I really want to.
They've got this one room, like the Monet room, and I think the, you know, interior architecture, well, that's a whole nother thing. The architecture of all these museums is like, you know, almost better than the art itself, but it's all custom made to fit these works. And you have to take your shoes off when you go in. It's all concrete. It's so beautiful. So beautiful. I highly recommend going. One of the best art experiences I've had. Actually, some of the best art I've ever seen, it's all been in Japan. Japan does things well. Right, they do things good. Yeah, really, really great way to see Monet. There are some other things that you've done that I've always kind of really wanted to ask you about. And one that I think is so cool is you had all your work, or not all, you had some work in Need for Speed, the video
game.
Oh, I did.
Yes, I was a video game character as well.
That's what I was going to ask.
I was actually in the game.
Oh, my gosh. So I saw they illustrated you.
Yeah.
You're looking all cool on a car that's wrapped in Giorgio's art. And I understand. So you also had like murals in the world.
Yeah.
And you're a character.
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
It was
how did
so
it happen? What like
surreal? Yeah, it's really weird to think about that. I kind of forget about it.
That's got to be one of those notches on your belt that you're like
that I didn't know that I needed.
Totally.
Like, I think that, yeah, I think it was something that I was like, I didn't know that I really wanted to be a video game character until I was a video game character.
Oh my God, I had no idea you're actually a character in the game. That's yeah, so cool.
I actually, yeah, I had some friends who like, because I don't think you could play me. Like I didn't make it very far in the game. Like it was one of the ones that was on the online version, and so it was updated, and they updated every like 3 months or something like that. So I think I was there for like 3 months, maybe 6 months.
Did you do voice recordings and stuff?
No, because it's the one where it's just like it's really old school. Like your character will come up, and then some lines will come up, like in text. Right. I don't know who wrote my lines, but they were funny as fuck. Mm. Like it was so like naff. So yeah, I think it was just like. There was like some beef and I would come in and be like, hit the road, Jack. Like, I don't know. It was like some sort of like weird thing like yes. that. And then like you'd race me and and you'd go through and that'd like be my street art through the whole thing. But yeah, it was really funny. I wasn't so animated. Good. It was just like, just a pop-up of a character.
Little illustrations.
Yeah.
Kind of like the similar to the illustrations in like Grand Theft Auto. Vice City, it's like kind of
yes yeah, exactly. Like that yeah.
Really really cool yeah. did you meet the artist that illustrated you?
No, he was overseas. Actually there were two artists that actually worked on that, I think. So I did a photo shoot and sent through these reference images, and then there was this weird thing where like in the reference images I was looking one way, but they changed my pupils to looking another way when they illustrated it, and it made me not look like me. And so I had to send through all these other references, and so that they could redo some aspects of my face, and there was all this weird stuff. But in the end, I was like, I think it looks enough like me. That
yeah,
this is fine.
So how did that kind of come about? And also, actually, more importantly, like how much work did you produce? Were you using old works, just submitting old murals, or were you actually creating a whole new body of work?
I can't remember how many works they ended up using. I think it was like 10 or 12.
Were you submitting designs, or were these NFTs, or was this just his work, put it in?
No,
you do
it was
anything?
Just kind of like so they wrap the cars, so you have to produce work in a way that they can just put it into their system and wrap it on the car. And so I think it was a mixture of work that I had, and then I produced some other work for it as well, and then I kind of like changed some color palettes and I did this stuff. And I think what happened in the end is that I was just like, here's heaps of work. And then they were like, can we use it all? And I was like, yes. I think initially it was just kind of like that they were only supposed to use like a couple. And then I was just like, what if you used them all? and they were super excited about it. And were like, yeah, that sounds great. So yeah, it was just that really. I'm trying to remember. I think that they had the idea of doing it for a while. And someone within them, their team knew me and was like, oh, I could just link you with George and we can do this thing. And they're like, oh my God, that would be cool. So I think from memory, that's how it sort of all came about. And then, yeah, initially it was just going to be doing like the raps. And then I feel like we had a meeting and someone at some stage was like, wouldn't it be funny if George was a character? And
I love this so much.
Yeah. And then they were like, that would be really funny. Whatever we do it, but it was great.
Did they wrap an actual car for promo for the release or anything like that?
Oh, no, I think that we were talking
about
it.
Come on, guys.
Yeah, we were talking about it, but then it never really sort of eventuated. I know, just in game.
Do you know that artist David Cho?
Yes.
Yeah. I recently heard him. I think he was on Joe Rogan recently, and he was telling this story about how he, I think, by chance met one of the directors or something for one of the new Star Wars. And he just like made an offhand comment because it was like a rebel planet. And he's like, oi, your planet needs street art. And he's like, what? And he's like, it's a rebel planet. If, you know, the place is in disarray, there's no street art. It needs, if people are rebelling, there would be street art and graffiti.
Yeah,
and he's like, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
I want you to do it all.
Yeah.
And so like then they got him, so and then he was cool. Like full researching everything. And it's like, okay, those aliens are at like 4 foot height. So all the graffiti
that's
would be four
cool.
foot. And then they wanted to pay him and he refused payment. And he's like, no, just make me a character in Star Wars.
Yes. Like,
this guy.
Yeah.
I love this story.
Exactly.
And he made up like an alien. And yeah, it's like.
That's so cool.
So awesome. Your resume is so bloody huge. Like that's just one of the many incredible things you've done. I've seen you've like Prosecco labels, you've done all sorts of different kind of things. Are there any other bizarre, interesting, quirky projects that you've been involved in that I have not managed to find?
I don't know.
Anything that's kind of, I don't know, surprised you, like blown you away, just like, wow, how did this happen?
Sometimes I don't know where people, yeah, it's funny. I think it, I've always been surprised when people reach out to me and I'm like, where did you hear about me? Like, I think when, the guys in Taiwan invited me over to do a street art festival in Taiwan, and I was just like, how did you guys find out? Yeah, of course, I'll come to Taiwan and do that. So,
The internet, George.
The internet. that little thing known as the internet. I'm trying to think of other things that I've been involved with. I generally don't, remember everything.
Well, when you're in 2 weeks for at a time for 8 years, things,
yeah, everything can like just gets lost in there. I think I just kind of like, I'll go scroll back through my phone and I'll be like, oh yeah, that thing, oh that other thing, like sort of stuff. And even like, you know, I won't have everything in my phone as well. If, you know, there's just folders and folders on my computer of just like stuff from things. So yeah, I don't know.
What's the most piece or project that's impressed you the most, where you've been, or that you're most proud of?
That's just a like, hard whoa. Question that I don't know how to answer.
That recent one, maybe last year, was it for Darwin Street Art Festival? Actually, that was huge.
Yeah, I love.
How big was that?
That was
big.
You know what? I think it was like 11 stories high, but I don't think I painted the lower two stories.
So 9 stories.
I think it was 9 stories.
That's the biggest wall you've ever done?
It was the tallest wall.
What's the biggest wall you've ever done?
I don't know.
Big.
Can't do tomorrow. That was the, that was
pretty, I worked with, I helped you with that.
Yeah. That was like, Jack, I need you.
Floor, ceiling, every wall, every pipe, every stair.
Yeah. I don't know size wise. Actually, even Marrickville Metro would have been bigger than the Darwin wall. But Darwin was definitely the tallest. And of most recent walls, yeah, I think probably my favorite. I really loved it. I loved that experience of working up there. The team up there is, it's fucking great. And
good bunch of people up there.
Oh, God, I love them so much. If I could do the pandemic again, I would move to Darwin.
Totally. I love it. Lost a lot of good friends to Darwin. They go up there and like, why would I go back?
Why would I ever move anywhere else? Yeah, yeah. It's so nice.
Yeah, so good. Still haven't been. I was trying to get there.
Are you serious?
Trying to get there. I really, really want to like, I've kind of fixated like I want to be able to build a body of work based on at least that part of the world. If not it Darwin, Kimberley, Kakadu, somewhere up there. It's just incredible, right? The real Australia. I mean,
part of Australia
is the real Australia.
Australia is part of Australia.
But much more iconically Australia, you know.
I think, your work totally lends itself to that area. You definitely need to get up there.
It looks sick.
It's beautiful.
So when you're up 11 stories, you want a boom lift? Or you want a
big boom?
Big boom.
Big boom. Yeah. It was, it had like three different articulation points. Biggest boom I've ever been on, and I loved him. I loved him so much. I love being up high. It's so much fun. And shout out to my assistant Jordan. He was fucking rad.
Pabs.
And I didn't. Yeah, Pabs.
He's a man.
He's also scared of heights. and he keeps on walking up high. I know.
Man, it's like Christian Vine. He is so tall, and we used to work on swing stages together. Mm. And often these swing stages, the barrier were below his hip. So like super, and he hated it. Eventually, he was like, "I'm not doing this anymore." But all these people who just cannot stand heights or
I love it.
Yeah,
I love it.
I kind of like it.
Yeah, no, I honestly like, it's my favorite. I was for ages. I was really annoyed at getting these long, lower walls or like walls that were like, you know, 4 meters high, and I'd be like, "Give me a tall boy, give me a big boy."
No one can graph it, which is good.
Yeah,
it's true. Yeah. What's the worst project? What's the most awful, hardcore, everything went wrong?
Oh, there's so many. I don't know.
I don't even know. It's kind of hard.
It's triggering. But it's also really hard to talk about the bad projects because you don't ever want...
People are involved.
You don't want the clients to know how bad it was.
True.
Like I won't specifically refer to any clients, but like, you know, I said I've done a couple of rooms and there was this one room where like it was horrible. And like there were people walking through the space the whole time. I never had access to like what I needed to. And like it was just like, oh, and then there's another project that I can think of where like it just kept on getting pushed back until it was the middle of winter and the location that it was in, it was like below, you know, sub-zero temperatures and my fingers were like freezing off and the paint wasn't drying and I'd just watch it slowly drip down the wall and then I'd come back the next day and be like, cool, this is fine.
Good.
Like,
yeah, it's actually like, better this way. Ah. Fuck me.
There's always, I will say, it's always the stuff that you never anticipate. Like honestly, like... I keep thinking I've been doing this for a little while now. Like surely I've experienced every single problem that can possibly happen on a project. No, there's still shit that goes wrong that I just would never have seen coming. And I'm just like, oh, okay.
There's always weird shit, isn't there? Yeah. Remember that one we did for that Daniel Johns exhibition and the section of concrete in this car park was constantly, I don't know what was happening. It was constantly seeping through liquid from within the concrete. And it was creating this really weird ripple effect. I don't even know how to deal with that.
Yeah. This concrete is one of those, like silent killers. Like there was a job next to it on a seawall that I had done once. And oh my God, the people, the builders, I feel like dealing with dudes can be like interesting as a chick who, I'm a little bit of a nerd when it comes to like materials and to things. And so I like to research stuff and whatever else. And so there was this one job in Sydney, which was along a seawall and, there were these builders and they'd put up this like new concrete cement. And I was like, sweet. Okay. Like, so concrete's got to be like dealt with really in a specific way after it's been poured because like it can leach. Usually it leaches a bit of lime afterwards and it takes a little while to like wear in and like, you know, whatever else. And so these builders were like, no, it's fine, it's sweet. You can just paint over it. And I don't know, there were so many problems with that job, but water kept on leaking out from it. And I was like, bros, like there's this water keeps on leaking out. Like I can't paint on this section because it's just going to like build up behind the paint and push it out and bubble and it'll peel away. And they just didn't believe me that this was happening. And essentially what happened in the end was like I ended up just kind of like being like, okay, well, I'll do it and we'll see what happens. And I did it. And then like, lo and behold, half of the wall peeled away over time. And I was just like, I can't control this. Like I can tell you what's happening, but I can't control like some of the elements here. And it's just like, people will come back and be like, why is this happening? And it's like, because other
people. Because all the things I told you about that would happen.
Yeah. It's,
Weirdest place you've ever painted. Weirdest country, town, weirdest whatever.
Paris.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Recently.
Yeah?
Oh, God. I have barely talked about this project. It's probably because it's a really recent sort of thing, but I did a project as part of a festival in Paris and it was in a basement, but it was like three or four stories down and it was colder. It was the middle of winter as well. And it was colder there inside than it was outside. And I was painting in the pitch dark with UV lights and UV paint because for some reason they were like, no, you're painting with UV paint. And I was like, I don't really do that. And so I'd get up, I'd go in there. It was dark until like 9 a.m. in the morning. And so I'd go in and while it was dark and I'd paint and then I'd come out at whatever time I'd come out and it was dark again and I didn't know anyone in the city and they were just, I was like, hey guys, like I don't speak the language. Is someone going to be able to like, you know, assist me to like, I don't know, buy food? Like I just had no assistance and like I'd just turn up and like no one would say hello and I just like walk in and I'd be like, am I allowed to be here? It was so weird. But it was just like this fact that it was just like so dark and I had no light and I had no water and I had like I just had nothing, and I'd just turn up and I'd paint in this bunker and then I'd leave. And I was like,
just with a neon glow to you, radiating color.
It was so strange. It was very strange. That one was like a really difficult. That was a really difficult time.
And finally, and on a positive note, have you ever nearly died during your job?
Oh, I don't know.
I know a few who have very nearly.
Really? Not that I'm aware of, but I have.
That's good.
Yeah, I feel like I've never almost died that I've been aware of, but I've also been like pretty blissfully unaware of, like, you know, some of the probably stupid shit that I've done in my time, like climbing on things and, you know, especially just seeing what I can get away with. I will say that one time I was in Florida painting, and this is the only time that I ever felt unsafe on a wall, is I was painting in this location, and this guy who's a homeless person who lived close by, and, like, you know, as a person painting in public, like, I fucking love interacting with everyone. But this guy was sort of like watching me, and like he kind of gave off a bit of a like weird vibe, but I was like, it's fine, whatever, like else. And then like he asked, like, you know, can you take your glasses off, your sunglasses off? I need to see into your eyes. And I was like,
God,
why do you need to see into my eyes? And he's like, I need to see into your eyes. Like, you know, can you take your sunglasses off? I was like, no, it's cool. I'm just going to keep on painting. Like, no, I need to. And he got really like,
I'm not asking.
Yeah, really aggressive about it. And I was like, okay, if I take my sunglasses off, then, you know, will you let me just keep on painting and to go away and that sort of stuff? And he was like, yep. And so I like took him off, and he kind of like did this weird thing where he like went into a trance, and then like he snapped out of it, and he went, you will die in your lover's arms.
Oh my God.
And he said some other stuff as well. Like, it was so surreal.
You will die in your lover's arms.
Yeah, like, you will die in your lover's arms.
That's nice.
And I was like, well, I guess that's good. And he said some other stuff. And then, like, he wanted to, like, shake my hand or touch me or something.
Nope.
And he was covered in tattoos. But the one that I really, like, kind of, like, noticed was that he had a swastika, like, tattooed on his thing. And I was just like...
And he was no Buddhist.
I was just like, I don't think that you're a nice person.
Yeah.
This is the only time that I've ever felt unsafe was like, yeah. And so he was, and I think the people in there were like, let's not leave you alone here anymore.
Sounds like you met Florida Man, the notorious Florida Man.
I mean, I don't like making assumptions about anyone, but he was definitely.
I think when you spot a swastika on their hand, like you can and safe to make assumptions.
Yeah, the weird kind of like, I wish I remember like the rest of what he told me about like his prediction. And I was just like, well, that's, yeah, because it was kind of like something like, you know, you'll die young or like, I don't know. There was some sort of like weird cursey aspect to it where I was just like, interesting.
Oh, that's hectic.
So, Yeah.
George, it has been an absolute pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much for coming on.
No, thank you for having me.
Oh, of course. One last plug for your show. How do people go and see your exhibition?
KSR Gallery, Melbourne, on the corner of Collins and King Street.
Mm-hmm. Bottom of the Rialto.
Bottom of the Rialto.
And it's called Hyper Vista.
Hyper Vista, yeah.
And it's excellent.
Till June 30th?
Yeah. And how do people find you? How do people get a wall? Or how do people follow your art?
People, it's probably easiest. I am working on a website at the moment, but it's probably easiest if you just follow me on Instagram, George_Rose.
Amazing. Sweet. Thank you.
Thanks, man.
Legend. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Take it easy.